Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Kuminga. Waters has it. Pass to Kuminga. Reaches back and gets it and glides home. Two-hand slam. Jonathan Kuminga. 195. Credit Waters with a nice lead pass.
Bay Area, this is Jonathan Kuminga. You're listening to Wheeler and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
And yeah, hey Dibs, your picks stink.
He texted us his pick for tonight.
I know. He went into the break with a big old L, and he is coming out tonight with this, and very, very strong take that tonight the right pick is the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions minus 3.5. He texted us that. He's not here to actually stand on what he said. Stand on what he do. But he says Lions minus 3.5. Hey, America, you know what to do. It's going to be an upset tonight inside Levi Stadium.
Oh, Niners money line is what you're saying.
Or maybe they just lose.
Niners going to win.
Maybe they just lose by three. It's the kickoff show presented by Habas Law. You've been wrong. Habas Law, fight to make it right. Call 1-800-INJURED or visit HabasLaw.com. That's Grandy in for Dibs. Mark Willard with you. We are in Santa Clara getting ready. I will say this real quick. We're looking out on the exact same tailgate that we always look out on, and there is one very, very clear character to it this time as opposed to other weeks. The Lions fans are dancing and the Niner fans are just drinking. That's it. Look at these people. Look at these people. The Lions fans will not sit down. They like it's incredible. White men are dancing in Honolulu blue jerseys.
On December 30th in Santa Clara. How often do you see an offensive lineman jersey? We got a Penei Sewell jersey.
Penei Sewell. Yes. Well, he good.
He is good.
And if you want to know why the Lions are so much better than the 49ers this year, those would
look
be
at
my
the offensive
first
line.
Two words: offensive line.
And speaking of offensive line, I know we'll get into it a little bit later on in the show when we actually talk about this football game. Who the hell are the Niners going to start on the offensive line tonight?
Oh my God, I was reading about the names and I'm like, who?
Who are these
this
people?
Is Bob? Someone's name was Tim? I'm like, I've never heard these names before.
I have no clue.
Which brings to the table a very fair conversation about Brock Purdy, which we will have a little bit later on, for sure. But not done with the Warriors yet. I'm interested to know a little bit more about what you said you saw Saturday night, particularly down the stretch of the basketball game, what you saw with regard to the way the team was using JK.
So I think you got to go back a little further first. You remember the game at home against Houston, Steph and Draymond did not play.
For sure.
Kuminga scored 33.
Career high at the time.
He and Wiggins led the way, but it was Kuminga the driving force offensively. 33 points. Nearly the same exact thing happened on Friday against the Clippers in L.A. Steph and Draymond did not play. Kuminga, 34 points, a new career high. But it happened again without Steph and Draymond on the floor.
Yep.
And I began to notice, and I've been keeping an eye on it for a while, how Kuminga looks, not just the points that he's scoring, but it's how engaged he is, how involved he is, and obviously some of it is just opportunity-based. Without Steph and Draymond, he's going to have the ball in his hands more often and will be asked to do a little bit more. But the two highest scoring games of his career, not just of the season, but of his career, happened within the last month in the only two games that both Steph and Draymond did not play in. And it wasn't just that he was putting up 25 shots. He got a career high that way. It was efficiency. It was rebounding the ball. His assist numbers were also up. He was making, as you were pointing out last hour, just making better decisions.
Yes.
And it seems like that is paired with when he is just playing more and given more opportunities. He plays better the more he's involved. And so my big question going into Saturday was, can he do that with Steph and Draymond on the court with him? And the answer Saturday was a resounding yes.
Yeah.
But it hadn't been in the past. And I think it's because when the Warriors run what they normally run, when Steph and Draymond are out there, which has helped them win four championships and has gotten Steph multiple MVPs and is why Steph and Draymond are going to be in the Hall of Fame when all is said and done, Kuminga kind of gets lost in that motion offense and the read and react and the, you know, let the ball flow through you and make the split-second decision and find the right guy. And not like you go brainless, but like don't worry about it, and you just kind of, you know, make the decision that pops to mind and go with the flow and trust your instincts. That's not what Kuminga's best at, and he certainly has room to grow and to improve in that area, but it feels like the Warriors have been trying to force Kuminga to fit what has worked for them, and kind of like they're pounding, you know, their head against the table, and it's not working, and they're getting frustrated. And I felt like for a while there's been a need for the Warriors to adjust their plan of attack offensively. Not to take Steph out of what makes Steph Steph, but when you've got an opportunity where Kuminga has an advantage, don't be shy about it. Go get it. Tyus Jones is on Kuminga in like a quasi-fast break, and he picks him up in the post. Steph, I'm sorry, we're going to run your pick and roll with Draymond later, but we got an easy bucket. Just throw the ball into him, space everybody else out, get out of the way, and let him go to work. There was a switch at the top of the key where Draymond came over, set a lazy screen, and Plumlee switched on to Kuminga. At that point, all right, everyone else space out to the corner. Kuminga, take him to the rack. Get fouled, make your free throw, split the free throws, whatever. It's a positive possession. We hadn't seen enough of that when Steph and Draymond were on the court, and I think we saw a little bit of a shift in that direction on Saturday, and if that is more consistently how the Warriors attack things when Steph is on the court with Kuminga, then I think you begin to see Kuminga's value a little bit more and how he fits around those other two guys. But if you're not willing to make that adjustment, I think you're just simply wasting Kuminga's abilities, and at that point it doesn't make a ton of sense to have him on the roster if you're not utilizing him in the way that makes him the most effective.
Well, to me the responsibility goes to two parties. I can gather what you're saying, and the fact that the Warriors, to me, the word that comes to mind is trust. I think they're ready to do all of the things you're saying. They need to trust that Jonathan is going to do the right things with him, and the last two games have been very encouraging on that front, so that's wonderful. But there's a second piece to it to me. There's a physical aspect to it as well. We talk about the decision making, but here's the physical aspect of it. Jonathan, I don't want you to sleep when the Warriors are not playing, shoot free throws. That's it. Eat, play games, and shoot free throws. And you can sleep if there's an extra hour here or there. That it is specifically because of his skill set that I say this. He is going to be able to leap over people. He is more athletic than almost everyone. And we know damn well what NBA teams are going to do to someone who can fly and who is athletic, but is also thin and is trying to drive by people. There are 7-footers waiting for you. There are plenty of them on every roster, and my man, they are going to foul you over and over and over again. That's wonderful for you, by the way, Jonathan. That's how you can make $40 million, because if you can make 7 free throws a game instead of 2, now you're averaging 25 instead of 20, and now we're talking about a different tax bracket. So that's his responsibility. His responsibility is to start making better decisions. We're seeing good things. And, dude, you got to make your free throws. You don't need to shoot 80 or 90. You have got to be north of 70% from the free throw line. It will change your stats. It will change the outcome of basketball games.
No doubt. And I agree with you. But I also think the reality of the Warriors situation, as you were just talking about a little bit ago, and to use your same analogy, the Warriors roster right now is a Rubik's Cube. And they're not smart enough. They're not one of those geniuses that can solve it in 20 seconds or whatever the case is. The reality of the Warriors roster and their current situation is they don't have the perfect perfect answer to everything.
Nope.
Like, they don't. And what's currently on the roster, maybe there is a trade and Vucevic makes the answer a little bit easier, or Cam Johnson or whoever it is. But as of right now, given what's on their roster, the easiest solution, the easiest way to see a solution and to see a change is Kuminga takes a step. Like, what else is there? I mean, obviously, Buddy Hield can make more shots.
Sure.
Schroeder plays better. But those aren't going to be players that take you from, you know, a play-in team to a top four seed. Like, Kuminga taking a leap and becoming a guy that averages 20 points a night and 7 rebounds and 3 assists and plays good defense, like, that is a jump that takes you from one bracket of team to the next bracket of team. And not that it's a perfect solution. Would it be ideal if Kuminga was the type of player who seamlessly fits in what the Warriors already do offensively? Yes, of course. But he's not. And I don't know where the solution is other than leaning into Kuminga more. And obviously, you're right. He has to make his free throws.
Yep.
He's got to continue to make good decisions. And if suddenly he reverts back to the old Kuminga and struggles, then okay, you got to adjust once again. But he's your best shot, given what you have right now. And I don't see any other way for them to figure this thing out and be better other than just, as you, the word you used, trust that Kuminga can do it, show him the trust, and put him in those best positions possible.
Trade deadline is in about 35 days, and it feels like this is it. This is it. If he's really going to earn that trust, and if he's going to be the guy that many feel like he can be, it has to start now, and he's off to a good start. Last handful of games, I think the Warriors can work with. It's time for Triples for Autism, brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society, San Francisco Bay Area. The Warriors made, count them up, 12 three-pointers Saturday against the Suns, and that's enough to meet another donation from Pettinelli to the Autism Society, San Francisco. That is the 9th donation of the season for Triples for Autism. Steph Curry led the way, had 4 triples. Draymond Green made 3. They all came in like a 2-minute stretch. Yeah. Was pretty fun. Kuminga had a pair as well. Throw in a couple of others, and that is enough for another Pettinelli donation to the Autism Society, San Francisco. To make a donation to autism yourself or to get involved, we invite you to go to sfautismsociety.org. That was Triples for Autism, brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society, San Francisco Bay Area. Pettinelli is here for you, offering financial guidance and support throughout life's milestones. Go to PettinelliFP.com. We're also sponsored by Crystal Geyser Alpine Spring Water. We're out at the game. Lions fans are dancing. We'll see if that continues deep into the night at Levi's Stadium. Coming up next, my very good friend, he's a San Mateo Bearcat. This is a Bay Area guy, John Bloom, but he's also the voice of the Suns, and prior to going to Arizona, worked at WDFN and others, longtime Detroit media guy, so he understands the Lions fan base well and the situation that they're facing. Fun guy to talk to today. We'll do that coming up next. Grandy's in for Dibs on Willard and Dibs.
Willard and Dibs.
Sorry about my dog. Hey, cut it out.
I don't know if we've met your dog yet, Steve.
Sounds like she's a stretch four. Got some size to her in that bark.
More of a backup point guard.
On 95.7 The Game.
Yep. Sometimes Steve Kerr joins us on the River Islands guest line, but not right now. We're going to have an even bigger guest on the River Islands guest line. It's my good friend John Bloom, who's the voice of the Suns. We're also in the midst of the kickoff show in Santa Clara, getting ready for Niners-Lions with absolutely nothing on the line at all. Let's go. The kickoff show presented by Habas Law. You've been wrong. Habas Law will fight to make it right. Call 1-800-INJURED or visit habaslaw.com. Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Hey, you know what? You're saying there's nothing on the line. You're speaking for yourself, all right? I mean, I'm deep into a 27-plus-year relationship here with a diehard Lions fan. So I am going to the game. It's my first ever Levi's Stadium experience tonight, and I'm going to be the only one rocking Niners gear out of the four Blooms heading to the game.
Oh, as you know, I'm aware, but the Lions also have nothing to gain by winning this game tonight. They just have to win next week, so I get it. It's so weird. I know. It's so weird. And actually, because you do have so many years under your belt, sports media in Detroit, and because you live with Lions fans, can you explain to the 49er fan base what was the dynamic like for Lions fans to go through the end of the season that unfolded last year?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I rode that roller coaster with my lovely wife, Jill, and our daughters who, yeah, they root for both, though. You know, when you're a kid or you're a teenager, I guess you can get away with that, and then you just pick whichever team's hot. So, of course, they're going to be in the Honolulu Blue and Silver tonight. But as far as my wife is concerned and her family and our friends from Detroit, I mean, that was a wild ride that I think in the end they all look back very fondly, despite the fact that they came one step away from making their first ever Super Bowl. And we know how the Lions or how the Niners fans feel about what transpired after the fact, because I'm one of them, and I feel the way you probably feel and a lot of your listeners probably feel about how they should have won that darn game and we should be celebrating the sixth Super Bowl championship in our viewing pleasure over the course of our lives. But as I've talked to you before, Will, I have taken on the mentality of a Lions fan, not just because I married one, but also just working there for the 6 years that I did and doing Lions post-game shows. And this is when they were awful, but they had Barry Sanders, who was amazing and still probably one of the best athletes slash football players I've ever laid eyes on. However, the futility is unmatched with regards to the Lions. And just you can't argue it. I mean, maybe Cleveland Browns fans feel like they've got a piece in it, but I feel like that argument ends after a while and the Lions end up winning it. Now, because of last year, that has changed, and now because of how they're poised at 13-2 with what's to come and maybe a chance to get to the Super Bowl, now Lions fans are feeling a certain type of way, and I'm guessing there's going to be a fair amount of them tonight at Levi's.
Oh, God, they're everywhere, dude. We're here now. They're freaking everywhere. So, yeah, dude, wear as much red as you have because there's a lot of blue in this area right now.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. We actually did go to the Lions-Cardinals game and enjoyed the heck out of that, by the way. And there were a ton of Lions fans in Phoenix for that one. And that made a lot of sense, too. But, you know, this one, I think, I wonder how much of it would have been the case had the Niners still been in the mix.
Yeah, I'm sure that would make a major difference. John, we want to ask you about the Warriors and the Suns and some basketball in a sec, but
do
I know
we
you
have
not...
to?
We do.
We won
that game, so we're talking about it.
Yeah, the battle of 15 and 15 teams on Saturday. The Warriors came out on top, but I want to ask you one more question about Lions fans. I know you are not one, but you close proximity to a bunch of them. I mean, this feels like a team led by Dan Campbell, who even though there is nothing to play for, and even though they're a team that has been bit by the injury bug like none other in the NFL, although maybe other than the 49ers. This feels like a game that they're still going to come out and try to beat the Niners by 30 because of what happened last year in January.
Oh, I think without question. And even for the players that weren't on that team that lost in the NFC title game, I think they've taken on the mentality and they're going to be bolstered by the guys who were, and they're still kind of ornery over getting that close and losing that game. So, yeah, I feel like that'll still be there. They're kind of like, you know, are sharks going to stay away from blood in the water if they're full? I'm guessing no. These guys are built a certain way. I think that they're smelling blood in the water tonight, and they're going to go have theirs. That's my expectation.
Can I ask you a Campbell question just because I know, and I know you've been living in Arizona for a while now, but like, I'm sure, this is my guess, Lions fans love the hell out of Dan Campbell for two reasons. He's a culture changer, and he did it, and he's also just, he's an easy cat to sort of like find very engaging, and so I bet it's a total love fest. Is there 5% of Lions fans though who are like, dude, you're crazy and you're gonna mess up at the wrong time again?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd put it at five. It's a great call, though, because inevitably, like, if you're in a conversation with a group of Lions fans, and let's maybe say there's enough of them to have, like, you know, six or seven or more, then there's going to be one, okay? There is going to be one. So maybe it is 5%. I don't know. But there is one. There's going to be one that's like, yeah, but do we need to go for it on fourth and six at our own 10? Like, is that something we need to do?
Seriously.
And Dan Campbell is going to do it because that's his mentality. And I think that now it's almost gotten to a point where the entire fan base has just accepted this is who we are, this is how we play, this is who Dan is, we love him, and you're right on the money with the love affair. I don't know that I've ever seen a coach that's more fit for leading a team in a city that he's leading that team in than Dan Campbell leading the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, it's been a match made in heaven. John, I want to transition. I know you don't want to talk about basketball. I think Warrior fans out here have been so distracted by their recent 2-13 stretch, or 2-13 stretch, that they haven't maybe been able to see what's been going on around the rest of the league. And the Suns have kind of been in a similar boat. I know KD missed some games earlier with an injury, and right now Devin Booker is out. But for the distracted Warrior fan who has been so concerned by their own team struggles, what the hell's been going on with the Suns of late?
Yeah, it's been a mess, to be honest with you, Mark. And you look at both of these rosters coming into the season, and I think I could even convince your partner, Will, to be on my side and say, hey, look, the Suns have a better overall roster, right? I mean, I would you agree with that before the season started, you would have been?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly at the top level of it, and also in the intuitiveness of it, like the fit of it. I still think the Warriors are trying to figure out their own fit.
Yes, but here's the massive difference, and this is what makes this kind of explanation, I think, easy for your listeners to understand. Far more probably easier than it is for me to explain to the Suns fans that I'm talking to on the regular occasion, and that is Steve Kerr. And that is the hierarchy that the Warriors have established. And I know they've had some change in the front office, obviously, with Bob Myers moving on, but still, you know, there's a culture there. And forget about Riley and the culture in Miami, which it's overdone, right? There's a whole thing there that everybody in the NBA is kind of over the fact that we're just being served up culture every time we go see Pat Riley in Miami. But here in the Bay, looking at the combination of the coach and then having Steph Curry be the guy on the floor leading everything along with Draymond, who's still obviously playing a major role. And I know there's people on both sides of the Draymond Green fence now in the Bay, whereas it used to be much more one-sided there. I think there's, you know, probably people feeling both ways on it. But he still, in my opinion, makes a massive difference for this team. All of that means that when you bring people in, like even a Dennis Schroeder in the middle of the season, who's been playing big minutes for Brooklyn and actually scoring a lot, and you bring him to a totally different system, it's going to take time. Obviously, it's not going to work right away. But the idea is if you get a guy of a certain acumen, he's got a mindset and he knows the game and he understands who is in charge here, which everybody does. I just talked about those dudes, then they all fall in line. And when you're talking about the Phoenix Suns, you have Kevin Durant, who just got there in a trade that was, by the way, pretty controversial when it came to the fan base, because you had to trade guys who they considered twins, Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, and they fell in love with these two dudes like they were two of their own family members, right? And so you grew this team together around Chris Paul, Devin Booker. They went to the finals, and everybody felt attached to them. And then you got a new owner who decided to come in, shake it up, bring one of the greatest of all time, and I don't have to tell you how good Kevin Durant is, and bring him to town. But that meant reset. And that meant reset without an established coach and culture, because you got a brand new coach in Frank Vogel. You go through that. You get rid of him because you didn't feel good about getting swept in the first round. You bring in Mike Budenholzer. Great feelings about a guy who was raised in Arizona, is coming back and has a pridefulness about him to try to lead the Suns to their first ever championship. But then you get through injuries and all this other stuff, and you can't rely on that established culture and system. And that's what I'm seeing firsthand right now.
John Bloom is the voice of the Suns. He also married a Lions fan. So here we are chatting it out right here on Willard and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Grandy is in for Dibs. I want to ask you this, John, because you and I had the opportunity to hang out a little bit recently. And on that drive, we were talking hoops, and you looked at me and you just went, dude, Steve Kerr is so good. He's just so good. And I want you to expand on that, because this fan base needs to hear from outside of the area what you mean by that.
Yeah, I love that you threw that at me, because I have even more kind of armored or artillery to come back at you with, because we just, you know, when they came to town and Steve Kerr was doing his pregame media, it was just before, or excuse me, just after the Territorial Cup, because, you know, that's what they call when ASU plays University of Arizona in football. Yep. Steve Kerr, a prideful Arizona Wildcat. But of course, I work with all these Sun Devils who, you know, went to ASU. So a couple of them who are in our television production staff came up just to kind of give him the business on it before he took the stage and did his pregame media, and it was so playful, and he handled it in class. Then he got up, and one of the questions that he got peppered with in Phoenix was about coaching Devin Booker on the Olympic team, and how you know, much praise he gave Book in Paris about the role he played on that team, and how he really sacrificed his own normal role to play a team role and help them win a gold medal. And Steve Kerr has an enormous amount of respect in Arizona, obviously getting some hate from Sun Devils fans, but notwithstanding, to hear that meant so much. So maybe to you know, talk about what Steve Kerr means in other markets, I can bring a little bit of a different view to that, not just about his past and spending time in Arizona. It wasn't just in college, too. Remember, he was the general manager of the Phoenix Suns and almost had Steph Curry come to Phoenix as part of a trade. That was all part of Steve Kerr's background here. I can just tell you that what I see him doing here is, in some respects, what I just talked about, the deficiencies with the Suns and not having this culture established. I look at him and I see somebody who absolutely gets respect from everybody across the board, whether it be the foes that he's getting ready to go out and scheme to beat or the guys that he's leading himself. And that to me tells me a lot about him. I felt that he was that kind of a leader when he was in Phoenix, although it didn't seem like he was all the way in. And then we learned quickly, because he was much more meant to be a head coach than a general manager.
John, the biggest story for the Warriors right now, bar none, is Jonathan Kuminga. And as someone, you know, who on the other side watched him put up 34 points on Saturday and lead the Warriors to a win, I'm curious what you think about him, because the conversation here in Warriorland is he good enough to be a legit number two scoring option alongside Stephen Curry, or should the Warriors look to maybe include him in a trade that brings someone else in? I know we're coming off of the high of Saturday night where he was awesome, but what do you think? How do you view Jonathan Kuminga and what, you know, he might be able to do at his best alongside Steph Curry?
First of all, I love his name. We spell it the same way. I've never gone by Jonathan, but he does, and so I appreciate that. Second of all, if I was regarded as a finished product at his age, which is 22, if I'm not mistaken,
correct,
there is no way in heck I would have ever been hired to do any of the jobs that I've gotten to do over the course of my career. 22 is just too early to completely judge a dude. Now, I know he's had a fair amount of reps at the NBA level. They also had him going and playing in Santa Cruz a little bit at the beginning of his career, more so, right? But I think it's just such a difficult task as a general manager to gauge what the return on a guy like that could be. Because, again, at 22, there still could be so much growth ahead of him. I'm not talking about inches. I think he's probably set at 6'7 or 6'8, wherever he's at. But I'm talking about as far as his basketball acumen, his IQ, and what kind of a teammate he's going to be. He's learning from some of the greatest to ever play. So all those things to me mean maybe give you a little bit more runway with a guy like that than with some other folks that might be the same age with the same amount of games played and experience, if that makes any sense.
John Bloom with us, voice of the Suns. We're also talking Lions, Niners. He's on his way to the game tonight. John, give me your view, because you've seen these teams all up close now. Handicap the Western Conference here, and where do the Suns and Warriors both fit in your mind?
Well, here's the one thing I'm curious about. Well, I haven't seen Memphis yet, and that was a team that before the season started, I was very curious to find out how they would bounce back now with a kind of reloaded roster with all the injured guys coming back. Now, they all haven't stayed uninjured. There's been a variety of them, but I do think they are performing kind of what I expected. They're better than people expected. They're going to be a problem, I think, to deal with for some of the teams. So that's maybe a team people didn't consider beforehand. beforehand. Then what's happening with the Minnesota Timberwolves? There was a lot of expectations in Minneapolis after their run to the Western Conference Finals. They've taken a step back. The Suns have to be better than 500. They just have to, with the talent that they have, with the coaches that are trying to, you know, reestablish a system. So my expectation is there's a rally there left in the squad that I work for. And then, you know, go to the top, Oklahoma City. Is anybody going to catch them? I don't think so. I think they end up with the best record in the NBA, because even if they do confront some injuries, I think they've got enough depth in the system that they've set up. They bring guys in and out anyway. It's a fascinating growth there. And also a study, because, again, they've got a ton of draft picks. What are the Oklahoma City Thunder going to do with all of that draft capital? And are they able to bring in another star to a place that nobody really thinks about stars going to play? And it's not going to be most likely through free agency. So if it is, it's going to use that capital. And then who knows how good they could be, because I already think they're spectacular. And then, you know, I think there's the Warriors, for me, are a team that if they're in at the end and they have the health, then watch out, because, again, Steph Curry is still making ridiculous around the world, shoot it with one arm without even looking at the basket shot, without even trying, making me try to describe that stuff. Are you kidding me? That's impossible. I just feel like they are a force to be reckoned with if they've got that.
Can you reenact that call? What did you do no. the other night when Steph did that at the end?
I don't. I think it was gibberish, Will. I don't even know how Tim Roy would do. You know, it would have been better if I was in Tim Roy's position, because I could have gotten, like, legitimately fired up about seeing something
about
that I would get legit. Instead of, are you kidding me, is really what the sentiment was.
Hey, really quick, John, you might be able to have some insight for Warrior fans. One of the names that has been thrown around as a potential trade target for the Warriors is Cam Johnson, who's on the Nets. You brought him up earlier as part
Love
of the squad.
That
went to the finals. What can you tell Warrior fans about Cam Johnson, and if a trade were to go down, what the Warriors would be getting?
I'm going to tell you right now, if a trade goes down, you're going to have a whole lot of people from the desert just hating you even more than they already hate you, okay? Because that guy is amazing. We absolutely adore Cam Johnson. Actually have some layers to it, too, because his little brother was going to high school with my kids, and so we had a lot of good conversations just, you know, throughout the time that he spent. And it was four seasons, if I'm not mistaken, and there was a thought that this was, you know, the foundation of the future of Phoenix Suns basketball. Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Devin Booker. And those two guys, obviously part of that deal to bring Kevin Durant. But if the Brooklyn Nets are going to move on from him, I think it's a mistake for the Brooklyn Nets, to be honest with you. They've already moved on from Mikal. So, you know, maybe they decided that they didn't want either of the twins. But he's not only a phenomenal shooter, he is a surprisingly explosive athlete. I mean, he'll dunk on a guy and it'll come out of nowhere, because normally he is one of those dudes that loves to stay on the perimeter because he's such a good knockdown three-point shooter, and you guys have had enough of those. I don't want him to go to the Warriors.
And here we're asking for more. We're always wanting more. But all right, John, I'll let you get on your way down here. I can't wait to see you. More importantly, when Brock Purdy throws his first touchdown pass tonight, how will you handle it? Will you stay quiet? Will you respectfully cheer, or will you turn and point at your daughters and say, "In your face"?
You got it. It's the last one, except for my youngest will give me the high 10 because she's got Brock on her fantasy squad in the Super Bowl right now.
Let's go. I got
my 15-year-old with me. Even though she's wearing Honolulu blue and silver, she'll be rocking with Brock tonight.
Well, I tell you what, I hope it goes the same way it did on Saturday. I love your family, but they were all wearing purple, and I was sitting right next to them, and they were so happy, and then suddenly they weren't happy anymore.
191, it looked great. They must have been dancing.
All right, buddy, travel safe. We'll see you in a bit.
All right, man, take it easy. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. There he goes. John Bloom, the voice of the Suns, spent years in Detroit sports media and joining us right here on Willard and Dibbs.
Loves Cam Johnson,
yeah,
huh?
He does. A lot.
A lot.
A lot. I don't know how the Warriors get him, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you know? I mean, the Nets have already now pulled two pieces apart.
Dorian Finney-Smith
is now a Laker.
D'Angelo Russell is a Net again.
Again.
He's been a Laker again and now a Net again.
Yeah, can we all say a prayer together? other that he's never a Warrior twice?
I mean, that would be the next move. After the Nets, he was a Warrior. And then he was a Timberwolf. And then did he go back to the Lakers after that?
He did. He did.
Was there any stop in between? I don't remember.
I don't remember. But there's a reason he keeps leaving wherever he goes. D'Angelo Russell, for me, and if you're a Bay Area sports fan, you will exactly know what I mean here. D'Angelo Russell's got big A.J. Pierzynski energy to me. This is like, dude, you just no. I don't. Like, don't be on our team anymore, please.
Yeah, if we are arguing that Jonathan Kuminga might not fit in the Warriors style of play, then D'Angelo Russell. So that was just a Kevin Durant's leaving. He's doing us the favor of making this a sign and trade. Nets, just give us whoever. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
We'll take whoever.
And it worked out.
Because it turned into Kuminga and Wiggins,
which is phenomenal. Just unbelievable that it worked out that way. And so maybe I should have fonder memories
of D'Angelo Russell.
Because I guess his friendship with Karl Anthony Towns was the MVP of the Warriors acquiring their two wings that they have now.
And winning the 2022 title.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't win it without Wiggins, no doubt.
Very fair. All that being said, I did not like watching him play basketball for Golden State.
Well, that was also the worst season of basketball in most Warrior fans' recent memory.
All right. Brock Purdy's name just came up a little bit, and I want to dive into him next. Our 49er insider, Jake Hutchinson, is going to join us in a half hour. And I think Purdy is so interesting tonight for two reasons. I hear Niner fans say, hey, you've got Bob, Jim, and Tim playing on the offensive line. Why are you sticking your franchise quarterback out there in front of this line when the games don't matter? That's point one. But point two, I had someone say to me over the weekend, they said, are you still sold that Brock Purdy's the guy? And of course I answered without even, yes, I am sold. And he goes, then why is he playing these two games? Which made me go, okay, you've translated Brock is playing into Brock is auditioning.
Got something to prove.
I really want to get into that conversation with you and all of you. Do you think that this is some sort of audition for Brock Purdy in these final two games before extension talks? And I don't mean auditioning for like 52 versus 54 million. Who cares? I'm a fan. I don't care what 50 whatever you get. It doesn't matter to me. Provided that the team still can be flexible to sign other players. The Niners aren't dumb. They will be able to do that. But on some level, is this still an audition? I want to get into that. We'll do that. Coming up next, Grandy is in for Dibs. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. You can certainly weigh in on that. Is this an audition to you? 888-957-957 is the number, Willard and Dibs.
Now, back to
Willard and Dibs
on 95.7 The Game.
All right, it's 888-957-9570, talking it out, doing the do as we get ready for Niners and Lions in Santa Clara. Also, counting you down to Warriors and Cavs right here on 95.7 The Game. This is the kickoff show presented by Habas Law. You've been wronged. Habas Law will fight to make it right. Call 1-800-INJURED or visit HabasLaw.com. We want to get back and forth a little bit about the Niners, and our Niner insider, Jake Hutchinson, is going to join us in less than a half hour. All of that said, we still want to clean up a little bit on the Warrior conversation we've been having, and Daryl in Oakland is on the line. Hey, Daryl, thanks for calling, man. What's up?
Hey, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Hey, so how you guys doing? Real fast, do you guys think that Kuminga's going to get at least 27 tonight against the Cavs?
Are you trying to place a bet or something, Daryl?
Prize picks or what?
No. What I'm trying to say is, do you think not only the Cavs, you think he can do that against Boston, OKC, Grizzlies, Mavs?
I don't think that the opponent, I mean, like, I'd love to know exactly what you're getting at. It's not like the Phoenix Suns roster is a bunch of young pups who don't know what they're doing, you know what I mean? Like, I think Kuminga's athleticism plays against anybody if he's making good decisions.
I see what you're saying. I understand that. But you go against those top defensive teams, then let's see if he can get 30. Now, either the Warriors are raising his trade value to look at something, or he's going to get 30, and we're going to see what he's made of. So that's really my test. And I heard another caller say it's early, too early, small sample size. So those teams, he gets 30 against those, then you got the real deal there. But also, I'm thinking, off note, Purdy ain't going nowhere. Purdy going to stay there.
No, but I know he's not. Yeah, you're
Kuminga,
right.
But if we're going to get back to our culture, strength in numbers, how many assists does Kuminga got? What is the average on assists? You see what I'm saying?
Why does that matter to you so much, Daryl? I mean, Klay Thompson's going to the Hall of Fame. I think he has like 2 assists in his Warriors career. That's not his role.
Oh, come on. You can't compare Klay with Kuminga.
No, I'm now, not. My comparison is based on the idea that a player is only being successful if he's assisting the basketball.
I see what you're saying. But if Kuminga can, if he's only driving this ball to the basket, and if he can dish at the same time, because he don't got no handles, if he knows where those players are, then that will really take a lot of pressure off of Curry. So, can we get his assists up while he's driving to the basket? While he's trying to make his free throws. That's what we need from Kuminga. Give me 30 against those teams I just met. Bring up those assists. Hey, we're going to keep him. But that's a lot to ask for Kuminga.
For sure.
He's a young kid.
Well, but Daryl, he's asking a lot too. Like, that's going to be my response every time. You're not wrong. I'm agreeing with you. Like, it's a lot to ask for Kuminga, but Kuminga's asking for a lot. Like, if you do want to get into a conversation for $35 or $40 million a year, then that's exactly what's going to be expected of you, you know?
There you go. And those teams that I just mentioned, you get 30 against those, pay the man.
Daryl, thanks, man. Appreciate it. I don't know if I'm as married to how the statistics play out as it sounds like Daryl is. I don't need 30. I need Warrior basketball. I need wins. I think the Warriors are looking for this to look a certain way, and it doesn't necessarily have to be 30 points in the box score. Even for the top scorers in the league, 30 is a hell of a night. Kuminga, you'd like him to be consistent scoring the basketball. Could he drive and kick a little bit more? Sure. Like, there's nothing he's saying there that I'm disagreeing with. I'm much more eyes on the decisions and the efficiency that Jonathan uses as opposed to any particular column in the box score.
Yeah, it's going to sound cliche, but it's just about making winning basketball plays. And sometimes the winning basketball play is getting 20 shots up a night. Sometimes it's deferring to somebody else who has the hot hand. And the greatest example of that is Stephen Curry. I think back to when Klay Thompson would have it going, and Steph, the greatest shooter to ever walk the face of the earth, would pass over and over and over again to a completely covered up Klay Thompson, because Klay's in one of those Klay modes where he's going crazy and Steph's passing up open looks to give the ball to a covered Klay, because he knows that's the best winning play in that moment. When Klay's going off, get him the ball. Does not matter what else you're going to do. And for Kuminga, sometimes the winning move is to take a big man off the dribble and get to the rim. Sometimes the winning move is to say, oh, Steph's coming off of a Draymond screen on the right wing. That's where the ball has to go, and it has to go there right now. I'm going to make a strong, accurate pass. That's how I impact winning on that particular play.
888-957-9570, the number. Grandy is in for Dibs. It's Willard and Dibs. We are live at Levi's getting ready for Niners and Lions, and also counting you down to Warriors and Cavs on 95.7 The Game. So he also mentioned in what he was saying there, Purdy's not going anywhere. I think the majority of us agree with that. We understand that it sounds like the Niners don't have too many questions about Brock Purdy and his future. He absolutely, if you look at the landscape of the NFL, there is really not much in terms of a question, in terms of what he has the right to sit down at a negotiating table and ask for. There just isn't. You can feel however you want about Brock Purdy, and his agent can go, Dak Prescott, Trevor Lawrence, Jared Goff, Tua. He can do all of that. And all of them are north of 50, and we've talked about how the average annual value isn't necessarily the thing anyway. I have full faith in the 49ers being able to structure this in a way that's not going to be, dragging them down for years to come. My question is much more centered on the current debate and the feeling that Brock Purdy is still, with two games left of his third season, and he is about to enter his first ever January and February that will not end in the NFC title game. Why there are still so many people talking about an audition, or approve this, or approve that. I'm not going to argue with people that this year's been a great year. I'm not going to argue with people that Brock Purdy is Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, or Patrick Mahomes. I'll certainly argue that he's in the next group. We'll do that all day. And so it was fascinating to me when someone said to me, yeah, that's why he's playing these last two games, because essentially the Niners still need to gather more information on who he is as a quarterback.
Maybe there's like two different angles to this conversation, because as you said, he will be on the Niners roster next year, and he will be the team's starting quarterback, assuming that he's healthy, week one, 2025. Maybe there's a contract dispute, and maybe he holds out. That could be the only thing that I would see that would keep that from happening. But he would be the Niners' choice to be their starting quarterback. But assuming we're not arguing about that, I think there's a legitimate conversation to be had about, well, this game tonight, Monday Night Football against the Lions, and then Sunday next week against the Cardinals down in Arizona, both teams that have been eliminated from the postseason, by the way, where you could say his performance in that game might impact the contract conversation this offseason. If he comes out against the Lions and throws 300 yards and three touchdowns, doesn't turn the ball over, and is being blocked by a group of nobodies, yep, and he turns that into a great performance, that could have an impact. By the same token, if he throws three interceptions and fumbles twice against this Lions defense, who has been giving up a lot of points lately because they have none of their starters available practically, that might also be have an impact on the offseason contract conversation. So I'm not on board with this being an audition for is he still the Niners quarterback of the future, but it's certainly going to have an impact, positive or negative, if he has an extreme performance one way or the other, what the Niners might be able to make the contract negotation ultimately end in this offseason.
Do you feel that way truly? Like, do you think that, I get how we look at life. Do you think the 49ers do that? Do you honestly think that one football game, whatever it is, I mean, maybe if it's the Super Bowl, I guess, but do you think that one football game...
This is just one football game, though. This has been a season of pretty bad football.
I don't accept the phrase. I know it's less than what was expected. I know it's been underwhelming.
He's thrown, what, 17 touchdowns this year?
17 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Do you know that, like, right now, I mean, Matt Stafford just won the division. Brock Purdy's rated higher. Jordan Love has everybody eating out of the palm of his hand. He's the 13th ranked quarterback in the league. Brock is 14th. And this is just in terms of rating. And they've played the same number of games.
I mean, that's like, he's the 14th highest ranked quarterback,
right,
in the NFL,
which is not wonderful, but it's not
barely top half.
But it's not, that doesn't make you quote pretty bad.
It also doesn't make you worth $55 million a year.
It does when you compare him to the other people around the league, and add in that Patrick Mahomes is the 16th ranked quarterback in the league, two behind Purdy.
Yeah, but so, if Purdy signs a deal equal or similar to what Trevor Lawrence got or Dak Prescott got, guess what? He's making more than Patrick Mahomes.
Absolutely, absolutely, because because, unfortunately, for NFL teams or for people who care about this stuff, that's how it works. Patrick hasn't signed a deal in years, so everybody's going to fly by him. There's tons of QBs making more than Patrick and more than Josh, and obviously they are nowhere near as good. I simply look at